Welcome to Back to School, a mini-series from the Sizzle podcast. I'm Dr. Joe Taylor, an educational psychologist, and every episode I invite a guest on to talk about their experiences of education as a child. And then we see if we can draw some links between those experiences and how they might be thinking about education and learning and the workplace as an adult. Today's guest on Back to School is Bookie Youssef. Bookie is a science teacher, a senior leader in a school, a qualified coach, and a teacher trainer. It was really amazing talking with Bookie because of the different lenses that she could bring to the conversation, thinking about education personally, in terms of training teachers at her own setting, and of course, systemically. So without further ado, let's get into it. So Bookie, really lovely to have you here and to be able to chat with you on a back to school episode. And I suppose for me, it's a particularly exciting episode because of the fact that you are coming to the conversation as an educator, incredibly experienced teacher. I know that you train teachers, you were also a teacher in my secondary school.
Which makes me feel a little bit old, actually, when you say that, Joe.
but it was so amazing because we were in a meeting with Fed, and there was peers, and I was looking at you, and I was like, I just feel this deep connection to this person. I feel like I know you, and put two and two together and realized that you were a science teacher in my secondary school. And so it's the culmination of like the perfect guest because you've been an educator in my life as well as more broadly.
Okay.
It'd be really nice to just hear you describe yourself and your work a little bit, and then we can think about education.
Okay, so no, thank you for that, Joe. And thank you for having some fond memories of me at your school. Yes, as you said, I've been teaching science for over 20 years and still loving it, I have to say. I'm currently a senior leader, a deputy head teacher in a special school, and I do that on a part-time basis. As you say, I train teachers, so that's part of the consultancy that I do. I'm an education consultant, as well as a qualified leadership development coach as well. So I'm involved in lots of different things. Genuinely, I still love teaching as much as the day in which I qualify to teach. I think that's really important. I've also diversified a little bit into the ed tech realm as well, because I've got a love and a passion there. And I just think that there's a lot of potential for ed tech. I think it could be a very powerful equalizer in terms of educational impact, even with regards to AI, artificial intelligence. I just think that there needs to be some very serious discussions and actions around how we can ensure that everyone can benefit from tech in the best way, not just in terms of the education here and now, but obviously in the future, you know, because we live in a digital era. So that's the context in which I think we should actually try and fulfill.
Yeah, thank you. And I'm really struck by the different impact that you're having at different layers of the ecosystem, the education ecosystem, you know, as a practitioner within your school, as a leader, and also as someone that is training other professionals. So I suppose I wonder if we could just step into a time machine.
Okay.
And we could rewind it to when you were in primary school. So let's say between the ages of like 5 and 11.
Wow. Okay.
And I don't know if any memories pop up when you think of yourself in education then.
Yeah, no, they do. That's easily that one. I've got a number of interesting memories. And again, the ages can't remember, but say 7 to 8, I remember when, I can't remember what year I would have been in, but we had I had a trainee teacher who was just awesome. I just loved the way which he taught. Now, I didn't recognize her to be a trainee teacher, but I knew that she was with us for a particular period of time. And it was just, she just made it fun to be at school, to be in my class and things like that. Not to say that my regular teacher was awful or anything like that, but I do remember, you know, wanting to, not impress, but just thinking, I really like this person. So yeah, doing like little hand cards and things like that. And she gave me one Christmas, this really lovely glittery Christmas card, which I actually thought, you know, I remember that feeling actually. So that's interesting. School was interesting also as well at that time, because we had things like times tables and spelling, you know, that's the usual, but there, even at that age, is an expectation of me to do well at school and making sure that I was keeping on top of all of these particular things. So I remember that coming to play. I remember some of my teachers, I think one of the teachers called Mr. Wyatt, who was a little bit eccentric. And I remember him giving me a real telling off for something, laughing at an inappropriate moment. And it was, I think, quite a serious topic, but someone in the classroom was laughing and that made me laugh and I couldn't contain it. And he thought it was disrespectful as I got told off. So that popped into my mind. And my last year of being in primary school between the ages of 10 to 11, Mrs. Reese, who I did not want to be, nobody wanted to be with Mrs. Reese because she was seen to be really strict and boring. I was like, oh my goodness. So when we found out at the latter part of year 5, we were going to be in with her, we just, it was like the collective class grew. Oh my goodness. But I loved her. By the end of year 6, she was amazing. She was just, I think she was a really warm person who, I'm not even sure why people thought she was strict. I can't remember why, but I remember definitely that. But she was an interesting person. You could really talk to her. We did interesting things like taking plants home to look after, you know, during the holidays. I killed mine. But that's a by the by. But I just have a lot of fond memories of her as a person. And I think, yeah, it was a nice way, an interesting way to end my time at primary school, I guess.
You know, you just took me back to year 3. And I had Mr. Placide, and he had the reputation for being really strict as well. And it's funny how the rumor mill in school, you know, the children are all talking. But yeah, he was such an influential teacher for me, and, you know, taught me left and right, you know, fundamental skills that I use today. And yeah, it's I am really interested in that kind of the label of strict, but maybe some of the things that can underlie that in terms of usefulness. It's curious to me that I think you said that they were Ms. Reese, but yeah, they might have been labeled strict, but you remembered warmth.
Oh, definitely. I'm trying to remember why. I'm just thinking about some of the things that she did, but there was just, she talked to you like you were a person. So even though, you know, we're 10 to 11, but she spoke to us as though we were, I suppose, young adults. I don't know. I'm just trying to find the right words to express it. But she is an interesting person. You know, I think she talked a little bit about her life. I think she was also Scottish as well. So some of the things that she'd done, but she was really interesting and we got to do interesting things with her. And I think she was thorough in what she did. So maybe that's where the strictness came from. She didn't expect you to do less than you were capable of. Yeah, but she was just, when you spoke to her and got to know her as a teacher, I guess, that, yeah, I have a lot of fond memories. And I was obviously glad to have her, but I can't still forget in year 5 thinking, oh my God, we've got this person.
Yeah, that's really striking the way you frame talking to you as a person or a young adult. And I could really see how for some children that could be very validating, but for other children it could be quite intimidating, depending on maybe the experience of relationships you've had or where you're at developmentally. But yeah, there's definitely a decision there for teachers in terms of, you know, how do I pitch what I'm saying? You know, do I talk to you like a a child, or do I talk to you like an adult?
Yeah, I don't know. She had an uncanny sense, I think, of knowing how to interact with us at, you know, at different levels. But hence, you know, like, again, like the responsibility, you know, like the plant and things like that, and looking after, which we were surprised to do. So yeah, I'd say very interesting person, and I'm glad to have her in my last year as a, you know, in primary school.
Mm. And you mentioned fun and pressure to achieve at a certain level, and
yeah, parental expectations. That was parental expectations. Yeah,
that's me as like a real dichotomy for education. You know, should it, how fun should it be? How much pressure should there be? I don't know if you have a perspective as someone, you know, in a leadership team that works with teachers.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, because you can have some education experiences that are fun, but you're not learning anything. And I think that so long as you're learning how it's being delivered, I don't have a problem with, because every, you know, and I think it's down to the teacher. I think it's down maybe to the school as well, because obviously they've got, say, like a way of doing things. But I don't have an issue with something being fun if it's engaging and young people are learning. I have no issue with that. Equally, if it's perceived to be strict, I don't have an issue with that, so long as it works for the young person concerned. And that's the key thing, you know. I know that there are some educational setups in which it wouldn't work for a particular type of young person. Like, for example, in my school, we had young people who were aged from 14 to 19, neurodiverse, EHCP. So you have to make sure that their learning experiences meets them where they are. But to some, it's a very, you know, like formal, not strict, strict is what, you know, but a very formal traditional setup, because that's the way in which, you know, they want the facts. They don't want any, you know, preamble about, you know, anything else that detracts from that. Whereas others, you may need to have more of a fun, in quote, way of, I suppose, presenting the learning, you know, like maybe linking it to prior learning or something in that of interest to them in the wider world, and then use that as a vehicle to present and bring the learning through. So, you know, two totally different opposite ends of the spectrum, but learning still at the heart of it. So that's the reason one. I think I've always been like that in my school. As I say, whatever works for the young person is what we have to do so long as they learn. And I think that just basically captures my thinking. I don't necessarily subscribe to the dichotomy as such. I just think it's a bit of a, not lazy, I just think it's the, I think it's a bit of a boring way of trying to say how education should be. It's not one or the other, you know. But having said that, I recognize that as an educator, if you have a preference for one way of teaching or a particular methodology as opposed to another, that's fine, so long as you don't try and say that everything for deaf will be like that.
Yeah, I think that's a really lovely, lovely way to frame it. Learning's at the heart of it. And, you know, if you're achieving that, then that's great. So let's step back to the time machine.
Okay.
And we're landing in secondary school times now. So I suppose we're talking 11 to 16. And I don't know what kinds of memories might pop into your head at this age.
So the first memory that pops in is when I was 11, just starting secondary school. And with a name like Wookie Yusuf, a lot of the teachers were expecting to see a boy. And instead you saw this very timid looking, very well-dressed young lady, student. In her school uniform, thinking, oh my goodness, I feel really uncomfortable because I expected to see something and I am the complete opposite. So that stuck with me for a bit, because I started dreading, oh my goodness, here we go with the registers. You know, when you got a new class and they go through, and obviously because my surname is Yusuf, I would be the last person's name to get called out. It's like, you know, and they look around, so where is this young boy? And I would just put my hand up saying, no, actually, it's me, and they're like, you know, so that stayed with me for a while. So much so that if people, you know, if I get people who are doing cold calling on platforms and things like that, or emails, they say, "Dear sir," and I'd be thinking, "Come on, you know, get it right." So that, yeah, that's one of the first things. And I think another thing that popped into my head is about this issue of friendship. I went to a secondary school that then amalgamated, I would say, was it year 8 or year 9, with another local secondary school to become a secondary school that still exists. Because you had, say, like two different schools coming together, friendships and things like that was a bit of an issue. I think also friendship at the start of year, when I thought was in year, when I was 11, year 7, most of my friends at primary school went somewhere else completely different. And so I didn't have that many friends starting at secondary school. So friendships, I think, in a way, was a bit of an issue. So that meant, therefore, I was just like more into my work, really, initially, because, you know, there wasn't really much else to do, I felt, yeah.
Yeah, it's such a complicated age in terms of trying to navigate the increased expectation around responsibilities of learning and discovering who you are as a, you know, a young person. And
yeah,
so like you really captured the complexity of school, because it's about learning, but there's a real richness to that learning. There's a lot of social learning that happens as well as academic.
It is, and it's difficult as well, because I think, reflecting on it now with you, Joe, this is making me think that I think part of what's just come to me is people's perception of me, as I said, you know, first of all, they thought I was a boy. And then a lot of people thought I was of, say, like Caribbean heritage. Not an issue, but like when you say actually Nigerian parentage, I'm like, what? And then again, it's like the confusion as to what do you mean? Who are you? What are you? That kind of thing. That's something that is a bit of a thread as well. Also, yeah, as I say, I'm just thinking about how I didn't seem to match what people thought I should be or who I was visually or from my name. And that I found that a little bit, not challenging per se, but it was almost as though I felt I had to not prove myself, but maybe be a certain way, maybe. I think the idea about fitting in, obviously, it's not going to be unusual in that regard. But fitting in was another thing as well that I'd struggled with. So that's an interesting thing. So particularly from 11 to 14, because at the time, you had the secondary school, it was 11 to 14 in one particular setting. And then from 14, I think it was to 18, you did like your O-levels then, and then A-levels or whatever it is, you know, your post-16 qualifications in another type of setup. So 11 to 14 was really a challenging time. Yeah, in various ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's such a human desire to be accepted and to fit in, but I'm just kind of imagining that through the lens of being that age, 11 to 14, you know, you're trying to work out who you are in so many ways. So I can imagine that, yeah, there's an added layer of complexity and difficulty that comes with feeling like you don't match up to what's expected of you.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, these are your experiences as a child, and now you're in a position where you can influence practice. And I suppose I'm curious to know whether this is something that influences what you try and achieve in terms of the practice of schools and teachers.
Yeah, I think partly, in an interesting way, and it's almost accidental, in the special school that I am at, yes. So it's you know, we really have to, and we really do work hard in making the young student there feel accepted for who and what they are. So because obviously we recognize that there's a lot going on inside and we don't want to add to that. So yeah, we do a lot of work around them. around allowing them to have their voice, and preferences about certain things. You know, I'm just trying to think about in a contextual way. Yeah, we embrace the young person as they are. However you are, we accept you. It's not an issue. Because for us, feeling as though they are genuinely part of a school community is key. And part of the reason for that is because of the fact that for many, they've been out of schooling for various reasons and various amounts of time as well. So that sense of isolation obviously would be prevalent. But I think now it's more of a conscious thing, you know, working in our school, this is what we kind of like sign up to. You take a young person how they are, and just ensure that they are successful in a social context as well as educational and, you know, the qualifications that they actually get as well.
Yeah. So, that fills me with hope. And it makes me curious as well, though, about whether you, over time, have picked up different themes that you've noticed around what teachers might find difficult in terms of meeting children where they are or accepting them for you know, how they present or what they need socially.
Yeah. So for me, I would have found that I deliberately moved out of mainstream because of the fact that I genuinely did not feel, and it wasn't just me, I didn't think that, and it's not a criticism, I just didn't think that the mainstream school setting, you know, you've got like a large number of kids and things like that and lots of things going on a daily basis, was allowing us as educators to close meaningfully and permanently close the learning gap between SEND and non-SEND pupils. So I then said, you know, as soon as the opportunity comes to work in a special school to learn that and think about what can I actually do, I will take that. So that, I think that's one particular aspect as well. And I mentioned that because I just think that within, say, special schools, and they obviously vary, we have, I think, more opportunity to meet the young people where they are and accept where they're coming from, how they present themselves as a human being. I don't think it's always possible to do that in a mainstream setting. So yeah, that's one thing that I think helps me to do what I can do because of this educational setting I'm actually in.
Context and resources, leadership, all of that's going to impact. Let's step into the time machine one more time.
Okay.
And this time you've got a bit of choice because I'm curious about an adult learning experience. So that could be anything really, but 18 plus. I wonder if you've got any kind of key or sparkling
Sparkling? I'm trying to think. I'm really trying to think. I did A level retake, so that's interesting. And it was good that I did. It was good that I did because when I did I've got like a combination of O-levels and GCC. So when I did that, I think that had I have succeeded without having to do retake, I think I would have become really arrogant, actually, and a bit of an intellectual snob. So doing retakes was a very powerful learning experience and humbling experience as well. So I'm grateful for that. And another reason I'm grateful for the fact that, when I did post 16, so I would have done retakes at 18 to 19. There were some really powerful lessons I learned in the fact that you could fail at something, not get the qualification, but that didn't necessarily mean that you didn't have the ability. And I saw that firsthand because before I was, passing all the different things, you know, assessments and tests and qualifications and what have you. Got a little bit of a stumbling block at, I say, O-levels and GCC. A-levels, miserably. Terrible. The only thing I scraped the path in was A-level chemistry. And that's because I loved it and I, you know, did a bit of work. And I learned then that if you don't do the work, you're not going to get the qualification. So, you know, there's no surprise there. But it was really interesting about, I saw for the first time, actually, God, you know, you could actually have rubbish qualifications or not great qualifications, but still have a lot of ability. And that opened my eyes, I think, and curiosity. So when I did retakes at a local college, I met all kinds of, you know, students, some who were my age, you know, a little bit older. And that was great. That was great because you got to see more and learn more about different learning styles, what brought people to where they are, you know, what people wanted to achieve. That was a real eye-opener. And I think in a way that prepared me more for university than had I just got my GCSE straight away and gone on to do what I wanted at uni.
Yeah, there's something really interesting in there for me around lessons for life and, you know, the idea that sometimes you need to work hard, that sometimes learning is not always fun or enjoyable. Like, that's hard. That's hard to connect with.
That is hard. It is. And it's, you're right about that one, Joe, because that was a lesson for life. And I think that really opened my eyes and in a way moved me from being, say, like a kid that was learning to the first steps of being an adult, making your way in the world. And interestingly enough, I know you mentioned at the start of the this discussion about the fact that I was a teacher in your school. One of the things when I first started teaching, I remember in my first year of teaching, I used to say to you, you know, students, that the reason why it's so important to get your GCSEs and what it's like to have the ability but not pass, they used to remember those things a lot more sometimes than the science I'm trying to teach them. And that for me was like, wow, that's really interesting. And again, I think it links to what you said about lessons for life and how, in a way, it gives you more, not, what's the word, not grounding, I'm just trying to think. It gives you more to share with young people. It makes it a bit more meaningful and real. And it helps, I think, it helped me to connect and engage with them to say, look, I've been there, I know what it's like, you know. And, you know, for some of you, you may not get another opportunity to do the retakes and things like that. So let's just try and get this right the first time. But as I said, those key points that I shared from my experiences of not doing well, yeah, when we used to have conversations with the students, they say, yeah, I remember this when you said about blah, 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 blah. At first of all, I was shocked because it usually is like a ranty type of thing. If you don't do this, well, you're going to whatever, whatever. But the fact that they listened, I could actually paraphrase it to you and connected it. I was like, wow, that is interesting. Those years where I, you know, I questioned and doubted myself into and berated myself for not having got it right the first time, it wasn't wasted. It wasn't wasted at all. It, you know, it came in useful later on.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I wrote something recently thinking about some of the bosses I had early on in my career. And like a line from that you just reminded me of was just about how wisdom can flow. And, you know, it can flow from people, but it comes to flow through generations. And like, I love the idea of the students passing this on, you know, it's like Ms. Yusuf lesson passed on.
Yeah, that's funny. That is funny. Yeah. But no, it's interesting. I think we connect in different ways. I just think it's our life narratives that carry more power than I certainly gave it credit. You know, I just thought, oh, you know, it doesn't really stand so much or doesn't really mean much, but actually it's where the secret falls, but it's where some of the magic lies, you know, in terms of the connection with others.
Yeah. Yeah, I really agree. I think narratives are very powerful for helping us to understand the world and connect with other people. I just want to read you back a few key words and phrases that have kind of stood out, or we've come back to a few different times. Fun and pressure. Warmth.
Yeah.
Working hard. Power of narratives. I'm wondering, yeah, if there are any other phrases or themes that you would mention from our conversation so far.
I think the power of being seen, and that links in a way to where, particularly when I first started secondary school, people expected, you know, things of me without even having seen me or, you know, or from a, you know, from initial impressions. And it was the disconnect of who and what I really was with their perceptions of me. That is something that I think would actually add to that. Because, I think for a while I didn't really feel seen. I think that's the earlier part of my secondary schooling from 11 to 14, I think that was part of where maybe some of my challenges lay.
Yeah, that's a powerful phrase as well, the power of being seen. And I wonder if any of these themes or narratives find themselves in your work in the present day.
Absolutely. And it's a bit accidentally. So, you know, like some of the grassroots organizations I work with, it's about elevating others or allowing others to find their voice. I think that we all have got powerful narratives. And again, I'm not even sure how or why I came to that, but I just think, I'm just trying to think about, I think obviously in terms of my gender, race, faith, even where you have, I think, yeah, it goes back a little bit to my earlier experiences where you have, I think if people, I find it a challenge if people try and tell, say, how, you know, try to take who and what you should be, or try and share what your narrative is, what they perceive your narrative to be, without even asking you what it is. And that's why I try and encourage people who may not necessarily see themselves being represented in different spheres or forums to find their voice and just share and speak and make their presence known in whichever shape or form they feel most comfortable in doing that. So I've definitely been involved in organizations with regards to that. And that's the reason why I think with the thread of, say, what I do as consultant, the leadership development is definitely key to that. You know, I'm God. I took to teaching like a duck to water because I love it inside out, hence why I'm still doing it. Leadership, on the other hand, was very difficult and very different. And that's because of internal narrative, which I had to, you know, like work upon. You know, the usual things about, am I good enough? You know, all the rest of those type of things. Do I fit? So there's a theme there about getting in and being seen. So it took me a long time to come into, I suppose, my leadership presence. And I recognize that other people doing exactly the same thing. So when I did it, though, however, I think initially I found that I was doing it by, you know, having to try and work through these things and navigate things myself. So in terms of finding my leadership voice, in terms of knowing the right things to do, particularly when I'm leading on projects that haven't been done before. So rather, and I know how challenging it could be and lonely it is and frustrating and isolating, and how, you know, you could almost talk yourself out of doing a leadership role because of that. But I knew for me, what kept me going with leadership is having the widest possible impact. And I know that when other people as well share that that's their dream or passion or what they want to do, but there are maybe limiting self-beliefs or other things as well. That's why I think, right, okay, I know how to move you from where you currently are to where you want to get to, and have, you know, strategies that you can still continue to implement beyond that. So, you know, that I think is really important, and hence about finding the voice and the narratives and things like that.
Well, Bookie, thank you for braving the time machine and for sharing so much about your experiences of education. And it's been so nice just connecting that to the work you're doing in the present day. And if anyone wants to find you, I don't know what's the best place for people to look you up if they want to work with you? Or
okay, so I'm on LinkedIn as Bookie Yusuf. That's straightforward. You can connect me with there. I love Instagram as well, I have to say, for the visual aspect. But my Twitter, well, not Twitter, I was actually Twitter, my Instagram handle or name is Bookie Yusuf Official. One word. Twitter, if you want to brave the run the gauntlet on I Laugh, or Twix or X, or as I now call it, I'm not even sure, whatever that platform's called, it's Rondell10_B. And for people saying, well, where the heck does Rondell come from? I love jewelry. I love making jewelry. And Rondell's a type of jewelry bead. And they're the main ones, really. They're the main platforms. I'm on LinkedIn pretty much every other day and Instagram all the time. So it's one way of actually reaching me, you know, for sure.
Boom. It's an audio medium, so people won't know how much wonderful jewelry you're wearing.
Oh, right,
I've had the pleasure of seeing all of your jewelry.
Tell me what the Rondell bead is. I haven't heard of that before.
Oh, right. So you've got different types of beads. For example, you've got like a bicone bead, which is like this, is like a triangle. You've just got like ordinary spherical beads. But a Rondell bead, it's imagine if you've got like a round bead, but it's been flattened. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, hey, search it up. You've been listening to the Sizzle podcast, and if you enjoyed today's episode, the best thing you can do to help is to subscribe to the Substack, and that way you'll get all new episodes straight to your email, and you'll be first up for articles, resources, and lots of other goodies. And also to share it, you know, send the podcast to people that you think might enjoy it. Catch you next time on the Sizzle podcast.